Will Turpin is a multi-platinum artist and songwriter and backing vocalist for the Atlanta rock band Collective Soul. He is a member of the Georgia Music Hall of Fame and spent his life surrounded by all types of music. Collective Soul, which officially formed in 1993 and charted an astounding 7 number one hits and 19 top 40 singles in a 7-year period. To date, they have sold more than 50 million albums. We have the bassist, Will Turpin, here in our studios with you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, man. Glad to. Thanks for your time as well, man.
Well, so where were you born? Let's just start with some basic bio stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was, I'm definitely a Georgia boy, but I was born in Fairbanks, Alaska, Fort Wayne. Yeah. Fairbanks, Alaska. My father was in the Army. He had failed out of college and figured that if he auditioned for the Army band and made a position, then he wouldn't be on the front lines. So he enlisted and tried out for the Army band. And so he was entertaining troops in Fairbanks, Alaska. Yeah.
And so you moved as a young boy to Georgia? Is that?
Yeah, I would have been. Yeah, I would have been like, I think like 14 months old.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you practically born and raised here. Yeah. And is that in Jonesboro where you were born? Where you were raised?
Yeah, I grew up my whole life in Stockbridge. Yeah.
Stockbridge.
Yeah.
And your father ended up running a studio that you run to this very day. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now. Reel to Reel. Reel to Reel Studios. My dad opened the studios. I mean, it was a bit of a necessity for him. He was a songwriter and in bands himself. He opened the studio in 1976. The place I'm at today was opened in 2003. It's Reel to Reel Studios right here in Jonesboro.
And so when you're not with Collective Soul and when you're not doing some of your solo projects, are you involved in producing other albums besides your own work?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, that's definitely a passion of mine. Any type of music, other people's music, my music. I'm working on another record soon here.
I'd ask about that.
Producing this is a really cool band I'm producing right now. This is Melody Kaiser and Hey Dreamer.
Nice.
Well, that actually closes the record. It's not necessarily a great representation of the work, but
it sounds good.
Yeah.
Now, what sort of music did your dad play when he was in bands? Was it rock and roll or?
Yeah, it was rock. It was country rock. It was a little bluegrass. One of the first bands he was in was a band called Saturday Session, and they were kind of stomp grass before Mumford and Sons and before that whole rage. They were bringing a drum set on to a bluegrass band and moving along a little more rock and roll in the choruses and driving it with some kick drum and stuff.
Nice.
But yeah, anything, you know, country, rock, that's what he grew up doing.
And you grew up around all of this. What's the first instrument you learned?
I guess the first instrument I started messing around with would have been drums or piano. I don't remember because it was such early memories. I don't remember. They were always.
You never made a conscious decision to get into music. You were just all a part of you from the
always
beginning.
Around me. Yeah.
That's incredible. And you grew up there in Stockbridge. When you met some of the members of Collective Soul, how old were you?
I've known Ed and Dean, again, as far as my memory. I've known Ed and Dean my entire memory of my life. I've known who they were because we went to the Baptist church there in Stockbridge. Their father was, at that point, assistant pastor and music minister. He was my choir director in like the youth choir. And I knew who Ed and Dean were. At probably 8 years old.
And so the other members of the band, some of the guys that have left since then, Ross and who else? Shane. Who else? And Shane, yeah. Who were they?
I mean, when did you get to meet them? We all went to Stockbridge High School. Me, Ross, and Shane, we ran together in high school. We were in bands together in high school. We were as tight as rope. And as soon as, you know, basically as soon as Shane graduated from high school, he started playing music with Ed. And Ross wasn't soon after that. And I was kind of last one to join suit, so to speak. But yeah, that was, and you know, Ed being 6-7 years older than me, Ross, and Shane, it was kind of like that. You know, his friends were getting married and getting real jobs, and we were coming out of high school, and Ed was at my father's studio working on his craft and releasing solo records, and we were fans of his, and we were all friends, and we were all musicians. So that was, you know, kind of happened organically in that way.
When did Collective Soul actually form? Was there a moment, or did it just evolve sort of casually or over time, like you're suggesting?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't necessarily a moment, but you know, Shane and Ed would have been the core of the group when they wanted to retool it and go from a band that was called Marching Two Step to something else. And it evolved over a period of year and a half. And like I said, I was last minute on bass. I told Ed and I told him I'd commit to the bass. And that was really right before we got signed to Atlantic Records.
Really? Yeah. Oh, what inspired the name? It's a cool name, but I've often wondered where you got the name from, Collective Soul.
It's from a novel, The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand. That was Ed's idea. She described mankind as a collection of souls.
Yeah.
Changed that to Collective Soul.
Shine was the first big hit. And it's my understanding that Ed was tooling around with it and realized that Dean could play the guitar. And so they kind of came up with it together.
Not necessarily, but around that same time that Ed was writing Shine, he realized that's about the time he realized that Dean had been playing guitar. He had been kind of learning at my house, or he was, he was basically best friends with my brother. So he was playing guitar at my house a lot. So Ed didn't realize that he had been playing guitar.
That song's interesting because there were some people out there saying that you guys were a Christian rock band. And I do remember Ed squelching those ideas. I remember the first time I saw you guys was in 1995. You opened up for Van Halen in Dallas. And I remember Ed just saying, we are a rock and roll band. Yeah. When I heard Shine, I didn't think Christian rock. What was it about Shine, or maybe some of your other songs, that made some people think that about your music?
Well, I mean, it was never, in our opinion, never a negative thing that somebody thought it was Christian music. It's just, you know, we just considered ourselves a rock band in all aspects of that. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, their father was a minister and we grew up in the church, and we are a Christian band at our core. That's where we started playing music in the beginning. But I think there's problems when defining what kind of band you are means that you're putting up fences. And
gotcha. Yeah.
That's what we were against, not about what somebody considers us, or we want to be a Christian band, of course. We want to be a Hindu band and a Jewish band as well. I mean,
Hints and Allegations and Things Left Unsaid has a really interesting sort of musical interlude, classical music sort of in the middle of it. And sometimes in your shows, if you go off for break or whatever, you play that. But I've noticed that y'all haven't had a whole lot of that since then. Who's playing that piece there in the middle of, you know what I'm talking about? I forget what the
Pretty Donna.
Interlude. Yes.
I don't know. It was some people from the Atlanta Symphony, I believe. I mean, that's Matt Serletic would have been involved with that, and Ed, obviously. And it was supposed to be an actual song. I remember the song, but what you end up hearing on the record is just what the string quartet did for the song. And then and it became what we know as the song.
Well, it attracted me to the band so much because it's an album that really breathes, and it carries into the next album, the Blue Album, where you're all over the place, from The World That I Know to Gel. You've always been a band that has such diverse times of songs in your records. What do you consider your greatest musical influence?
I definitely consider my greatest musical influence, I guess, I mean, my father would be probably, you know, if I had to be real, but as far as, you know, pop heroes, Paul McCartney, for sure. I mean, everything to me, everything he did was awesome.
Yeah.
And still continues to do. I'm captivated by the Get It Back, Peter Jackson film that's out now.
Oh yeah. And he just won't stop.
No,
he keeps going.
Yeah.
My favorite album, I think, might be Afterwards. I think I say that to you because what's amazed me about Collective Soul is that y'all just keep reinventing yourselves. There's been a slow evolution of your music. The chords remain the same, but your albums are never quite the same at the same time. And you said to me when we met in the pub that you guys don't have a whole lot of fillers. What is the process? How do you guys go about creating a song?
I mean, at some point, you know, you got to serve the song, and you got to have a great songwriter. I mean, Ed's lyrics, his combination of lyric and melody, it belongs amongst the best of our peers, you know. So, you know, we got great songs, and then you serve the song. You try to come together as a band. You use your ears more than anything else. You know, open up your ears and your heart, and try to, you know, create the emotion that the song deserves.
Does Ed come in with sort of the melody and the song or the lyrics, and y'all work out the song together as a band, or does he have pretty much the song laid out as he comes in?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of ways, and it's evolved a little bit over the years. For the most part right now, yeah, he's got a really good idea of verse, chorus, melody, where it's going to go. We might have to work out some arrangement tweaks here and there, work out the vibe, how it's going to feel, and some other subtle things. You know, back in the day, a lot of songs would start with a riff, and Ed would riff vocally and not really know where it's going to go. But yeah, man, it's all of the above, you know, and still to this day, sometimes it starts with a jam session and a vibe and a feel. But yeah, when Ed comes to you with a song that's done and he knows it's worthy, it's a good thing. It's a really good thing. So it starts there.
Do you have an album, a Collective Soul album, that you thought about that was your favorite in terms of just the process, how it gelled, how it went, the whole experience? Is there a favorite experience in terms of making an album for you?
Yeah, I mean, they're all different there and special kind of in their own way, but the Rabbit record was fun. We were on the lake there, and I was on the lake 5-6 nights a week, and we had all the recording gear there. It was awesome. Sweetwater brew on tap at all times there, and
there you go.
Yeah, I love the dosage sessions in Miami. We lived in North Miami Beach for about 2.5 months and recorded a record and had a great time as a band. I feel like we were definitely gelling as a band, so to speak.
Great album. Your solo album came out 2 years ago, and you said you're working on a new one?
Yeah, I've got new songs. I've started just rough demos, and so it's getting laid out in my head right now. But I'm going to execute and get something done here in the next 6 weeks. You know, and then you know you got to record now in the this is when you record in the off season, and get ready to tour mid spring through summer. You know.
Yeah. So you hope to have this album out.
Well, maybe it'll be out in the summer. Yeah, it'd be great to have it out in the summer, you know, June, July or something. Maybe five songs.
And you'll do a tour on that album? You'll tour it yourself?
It's tough touring. It's tough touring with my stuff. I play a lot of shows around Atlanta.
Okay.
So maybe we can get down to Albany.
Well, we loved you here. We want you back. You solo and Collective Soul. How many shows did you play after Albany? Was that the last, or it was one of the last shows of your tour?
Yeah, it was the last one we've done in a couple of weeks. So,
and that was the only time you've been here?
Yeah, that was the first time we've been to Albany. I went to Florida State University, so I'd driven through Albany many times.
Several times, yeah. We interviewed the Quilts right after the show, as you know, and one of the things they said about you guys was that you are behind stage, backstage, which you are up front. They couldn't speak too highly. I mean, they kept going on and on about how great you guys were to them. How was it working with them?
Oh, they're good guys. You know, we always love supporting. We feel like it's more of a team effort, you know, support the bands you're playing with. It's definitely not a competition thing. We always thought that. Yeah. Van Halen taught us that in 95. So
was that Van Halen the first big top flight band that you toured with?
No, that was 94. We toured with Aerosmith. Theaters with Aerosmith. But yeah, Van Halen really took us under their wing and treated us awesome, taught us a lot.
Did you become close with the Van Halen band members personally?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, then I have to say I'm sorry for your. I have to say I'm sorry for your loss personally. Eddie left us over a year ago now, and I think the music world is still reeling over that.
Yeah, man, you can't say enough about what he did and how he inspired so many, and really just innovative in so many different ways. People don't even realize how innovative he was on keyboards, and sure. You know, he started out on keyboards as a youth musician. But yeah, I've got the bass he gave me. He gave me a bass right there in 95. Yeah.
Goodness gracious. That's something. And you keep up with Sammy or Michael Anthony?
Yeah, Sammy calls all the time. We tour with them still, Sammy and Michael. There's that. Let's see and see if I can get the bass. It's the black one down there, man.
Oh, wow.
All black music, man. The third one in. Yeah, Eddie set me up on that. He would always walk us to the dressing room. He just always wanted to talk. He was friendly. He just always wanted to talk about music and hang out. So he was always in our dressing room, and he would walk us to the stage for a sound check.
Is that right?
Yeah. And he asked me, he's like, hey, what, you know, because musicians are always thinking, especially when you're young and you're a new band, you know, you got a little money. He's like, what do you want your next instrument to be? What's it going to be? And I was like, I think I want an all black five string. I want to start playing a five string. So I can get a low D and some different notes on there. And yeah, it was a couple weeks later, sure enough, get to the arena and Eddie's guitar tech tells me that there's something in the dressing room for me. Don't, you know, go to the dressing room first. Don't go to catering. Cause I was about to go to catering, I think. But yeah, went in there, opened the case, and then Eddie had snuck in behind me and watched me open the case, too. I mean, that's how cool he was.
So I hear stories like that about him all the time. Here's the greatest rock and roll guitar player ever, just giving a gift with no expectation of anything.
Too, like, half of his day telling his guitar tech, hey, tell me when he comes in there. I want to see him open the case.
Goodness gracious. That's something. When's the last time you played with Sammy and Mike or did anything with them?
We did some dates with them in 2017, and word on the street is there's more to come. So we'll see. Stay tuned.
Well, we are going to sit on pins and needles waiting for that announcement. Well, I know that we were going to just keep this for a 30-minute conversation, mainly for me to just tell you how excited I was just to see you guys in Albany, Georgia, see you come into Pretoria Fields and talk with us, and to thank you. But anything you want to promote right now, just to get out the word for anything that you're working on or doing besides what we've already said?
Yeah, sure. A couple bands that are working out of Reel to Reel Studios right now. The Corduroy Blue just released a single. Check them out. And Hey Dreamer is going to have a new record out in late January, and I produced that entire record. So, yeah, check both those out. You'll be able to find them on Facebook, your general things. It's Hey Dreamer and the Corduroy Blue.
Well, congratulations on all that. It's awesome to see, you know, we see you as the bassist in Collective Soul, but it's so great to see that you're far more versatile than people can imagine just by seeing you up the stage. And a lot of people don't know this, but I notice that those great background vocals that's backing up Ed, that comes from Will Turpin. That's you. You're one of the main background singers, at least in the live shows. And so your contributions to the band are immense, man.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. We enjoy it. And playing live is a special, special thing. And something we don't take lightly. We're very lucky. Thanks, man.
Well, can't thank you enough, and I wish you all the best. Please, guys, check out Will's stuff, the bands that he just mentioned for Reel to Reel Studios, and take care, man.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks.
There's a guy with a gun. He swears he's the chosen one. I think his pride is swollen with inflammation. We got weed, we can't smoke, but the prescriptions are afloat. My temple can't take all this information. So let's get high, high, high. Let's love where we've been and love where we are, yeah. That's a good place to start, a good place to start. I think we killed Lady Luck, or at least that's what they say. There's moments I'm involved, and there's moments I can't solve. But I take all these moments day by day. So let's get high. Place to start, a good place. Let's get high.